Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
Happy Christmas!
Happy Christmas!
From Caroline and I, from the past.
Yeah, we're speaking to you from the past right now. It's still a week before Christmas.
Yeah.
But we are talking to you after Christmas, because we're going to talk to you about Christmas television. This is the Seriously Christmas Television Special.
Insert sleigh bells, which I might actually do in the edit. Ding, 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 ding. Although we have not actually had our Christmas holiday, we have watched quite a bit of Christmas telly in advance, especially for you. So we do have thoughts on Christmassy things.
We do, and we also have for you the result of our kind of Christmas television poll, where lots and lots of you wrote in and told us all about your sort of Christmas televisual habits and what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy but watch anyway, all that kind of thing.
So that's what traditions have been hammered into your Christmas schedules through no choice of your own.
Until you believe that you like them, yeah. Exactly. I have quite a few of those. Yeah, so that's all coming up later on in the episode.
Sorry for any annoying noises in the podcast. There's building work going on in our basement, and this was the only time we could record. So
sorry. But through the magic of preview discs and streaming
and emailing polite PRs several times a day,
we are able to talk about the things that are on British television, sort of the 23rd, 24th, 25th.
Yeah, so things that hopefully should have come out already.
Shall we start with the one we didn't like?
Dickensian. The plan was to watch a couple of episodes of this, right? But neither of us could stomach more than one. So listeners who maybe have been watching it and actually stuck through it a bit, let us know what you think. But Dickensian is basically, I thought it looked quite interesting from the outset because it's a mishmash of all different sort of Dickens plot lines and Dickens characters woven together in one soap-like extravaganza.
Imagine a world with all your favourite Dickens characters.
Keep up, Bumble!
Morning, Mr. Marley.
Good day, Mrs. Gamp.
Sampson.
What a world it would be.
Over several half-hour long TV episodes.
20 half-hour TV episodes it's going to be. So
that's
10 hours altogether of television. But then if you think they're trying to get like the plots of about 10 different novels, very long novels as well, I guess they couldn't really do it in less, I suppose.
Yeah, and but all the timelines have sort of been squished together, haven't they? So you get like a young Miss Havisham.
Yeah.
So all these things, you know, despite the fact that they would have happened at quite different times.
And that Dickens wrote the novels over like 30 years.
Yeah.
They're all coexisting. All of the names you know, Scrooge, Pickwick, Bill Sykes,
Mr. Bumble,
Fagin, they all apparently live on the same street, which is... That kind of tickled me because clearly the BBC built like one Victorian street.
Yes.
And then everyone lives on it.
But there is something in that, I think, in a weird way, in that when you do read a lot of Dickens, or when over your lifetime, when you've built up a lot of, you know, Dickens books in your sort of like book memory bank, they do that a bit in your head.
They do merge. Oh, yeah.
Like sometimes it's a bit like, oh, wait, which one's he from? And you can kind of imagine them all being friends or like loosely related in some way.
I'm pretty sure that if I were to watch more of this, which I have a sneaking suspicion I might have to, because I think my family's probably going to really like it, this adaptation is going to make me more confused, not less. I'm going to be like, which one's Mr. Tulkinghorn?
Mm.
Is he in Bleak House or is he in... Great Expectations. I can't remember. You know, it's just it's just going to confuse me further. I, like you, was kind of hopeful for this because I really liked the BBC adaptation of Bleak House they did a few years ago.
So did I. Oh my God.
Like, I've watched the whole thing like four times.
Bury me with it.
And it's like, so long.
I love it so much.
And it was so clever the way they did it. You know, Bleak House is like a 1,000-page novel ostensibly about one court case and all of the ramifications from it. But they chopped it up. I feel like with that adaptation, they took it back to its kind of roots as a serialized monthly story when Dickens wrote it. So they chopped it up into half an hour episodes and they made sure to end each one on a kind of plot twist or a cliffhanger.
It was very sort of true to the structure of the original novel, I think. We should talk about that probably one day because it has so many great things in it, like ridiculously young Kerry Mulligan being amazing.
Yeah, and Anna Maxwell Martin's amazing in it as well.
Yeah, she's great. Charles Dance as Mr. Tulkinghorn.
It's a good point. Let's file that away for a future episode. But yeah, so having really, really loved that and having rewatched it several times, my whole family loves it. Like, we're not...
Yeah.
We have this weird thing where, like, we're sort of not allowed to watch Bleak House unless we're all there.
That's really cute.
Like, you sort of have to have a Bleak House quorum before you can put the DVDs on.
That's so funny. Listeners, for your, you know, for insider information, before we started recording, Caroline was quoting little bits of Bleak House, which are the same bits that my family quote. It's like so embedded in our like family consciousness. So yeah, the guy who's like, shake me up, Judy, but also, I am but a child in these matters. If you ask anyone to do anything in my family that they don't want to do, they say, oh, but I am but a child in these matters. I know not. Like, it's so great.
My sister says that all the time. So having really, really liked that, obviously, borderline obsessed with it, clearly.
Yeah. Hopes were high.
Hopes were high for Dickensian because they seem to be following the same structure, right? So quick, punchy, half-hour episodes, but a lot of them, and obviously set in the same world and based drawing on the same author's work. But for some reason, I just didn't like it.
No, it wasn't, because I think what I was hoping for, the thing is, if you watch a BBC adaptation of Bleak House, you're expecting something that is quite serious, you know, someone like Gillian Anderson being amazing, like, it's quite serious and like carries the weight of the original novel. With this, I was kind of thinking, oh, they're like mishmashing up loads of stuff. Maybe they'll be very playful with it and maybe they'll use it to like point out ridiculousness in plots and like maybe the characters will be real caricatures and they'll be really funny. And that's what I was hoping. I thought, if this doesn't take itself too seriously, it'll be really interesting and fun. And I found it quite po-faced
quite
and like
grim, isn't
not
it?
Really smart enough to bear that po-facedness.
Yeah, it wasn't self-mocking or self-aware at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it has to be played for laughs, but I agreed. I was hoping that there would be some, because Dickens is like that. Dickens wrote everything, even the most sort of pathetic and sad moments of he wrote firmly with his tongue in his cheek kind of thing. Yeah, so I was sort of hopeful that this would have some of that kind of style to it, but it didn't. So instead, I felt like I spent a very long half an hour watching a lot of people in top hats walking around.
Yeah, and I would kind of lose interest with some of the plots because I feel like each little strand of plot that was introduced, you're a bit like, oh, which one's this then?
Yeah, and once you work it out, you're not interested
anymore. Exactly. So it's a bit like a bit of a fun game.
Yeah, it's like a kind of Dickens trivia test.
Yeah.
And then once you've passed, don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the only one that I was vaguely interested in and that I could be convinced to keep watching for if I was assured there'd be lots more of it was the young Miss Havisham one. Because I feel like in Great Expectations you don't get much of young Miss Havisham.
Well, no.
Because she's old at the time of the novel. You get a few like her reminiscing and a bit of her story. But we're never kind of in the moment with young Miss Havisham. We always see her in her kind of twisted later state.
And it's such a character that really captured people's imaginations in the like, oh, what happened before, like that Carol Ann Duffy poem where she's like calling him a bastard and whatever, like that people are quite interested in that narrative and where it could go.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm interested in the kind of prequel that they've written in for that character.
Yeah.
Played by Tappence Middleton. She's not a particularly well-known actress yet, but she was in a really, really good adaptation of a recent BBC adaptation of The Lady Vanishes.
Right.
Which I believe is on Netflix. Perhaps I will have to recommend you that at a future point. It's very good. I really liked her performance in that, and I sort of would be interested to see what she does with young Miss Havisham. If I could just have that bit.
Yeah.
Do you think someone will make me a young Miss Havisham supercar after it's all been on?
Make them lots of cups of tea. Do you think they're going to go with one like big plot reveal, just invent a ridiculous thing that links everything together?
Or... maybe. Well, so Tony Jordan, who's the sort of showrunner who has previously worked on EastEnders
for years and years and years,
so he comes very much from a kind of British soap opera background.
He also did Life on Mars, which is just one of the best things ever.
I wonder whether he might go with the traditional EastEnders Christmas plot of like blowing up the pub.
Maybe you will. Yeah, I'd be interested. I think if I do watch it, which felt very unlikely when I was watching it like at 8 p.m. yesterday by myself, it would have to be a communal, let's take the piss out of this show kind of activity.
That's why I say I can see if the other three members of my family are keen, I will obviously watch it with them, because that's what you do at Christmas.
Yeah, and then we can start a support group for other people forced to watch it with their families.
So that was Dickensian. Shall we move on and talk about Stickman?
Yes, should we talk about Stickman? Did you like Stickman?
I did like Stickman, but you've since made me question everything I thought about Stickman by writing your article about... So, well, you say what it is.
I'll explain what Stickman is, which is every year on British TV, I don't know if they send them over to the States, but they do half-hour-long adaptations of Julia Donaldson picture books. She is of Gruffalo fame and, you know, Room on the Broom and those sorts of ones. And so they did the Gruffalo, they did the Gruffalo's Child, both which I love. And they always have like an all-star cast of like Helena Bonham Carter, James Corden, Rob Brydon. Like,
yeah, doing all the voices. Yeah,
very sort of like British Christmas specialty actors. And then this year it was Stickman, which is the story of this like actual Stickman who's so keen to tell you that he's Stickman.
And he's not a Stickman. So when I just saw the title and hadn't realised it was a Julia Donaldson thing, I thought Stickman as in like I've just drawn a Stickman.
Oh, right.
But no, he's like a twig. He's a walking twig.
I used to work in the children's section of Waterstones, so I'm very familiar with the Julia Donaldson oeuvre. Stickman is sort of like a twig branch thing with a nose and eyes.
And arms and legs.
And he's got like an identical stick wife and stick children. So the plot is that he ends up getting lost from his family in a quite convoluted way, where a dog like takes him away to play with, and then like puts him in his nest.
Swan uses him for a nest, and then some children play poo sticks with him.
Yeah, and then he's like almost washed out down out to sea in the river.
And then a kid uses him as a sword, and then a baseball bat,
and he's firewood eventually. Yeah. Yeah, so all this stuff happens to him, and he spends an entire year basically trying to get back to his family. So you have all these bits of his adventure, and then like shots back to the family home, changing, you know, with the autumn leaves falling or whatever to indicate the passing of time. They wait for him for ages. But I mean, you know, when you're sometimes like, am I joking or am I not joking? I was like, this feels very conservative and like promoting a very sort of traditional heteronormative nuclear family, where it's like, here's stick man with stick lady wife and stick children, and they should all be together all the time as a family unit, and that is what family is. And Christmas
they live
is.
In the family tree, it's called, which you pointed out in your piece is like the symbol of sort of patrilineal structural prejudice or something.
It's all about lineage and very weird. And then also, like, every time they bump into another family, they're the same. It's like mum, dad, three kids.
Yeah.
For me, it was quite like, oh, like those cards you used to get where it would be like, I've got the baker and the baker's wife. What have you got? And you had to, like, sort them into families. I don't know. I can't even remember what that was called, but...
Happy families?
Happy families. Yeah, exactly. So the idea of the happy family is matching mum up with dad.
Forgot about that game.
It kind of is awful now, because you would be like, well, you know, maybe two women could have a baby, or like maybe some people don't want to have babies, or like maybe your family is just like you and your 80-year-old grandfather, and that's all. It's a very like, there is one style of family, and it's the most important thing in the world. And also Stickman is like a bit of an egocentric idiot, because all he does is run around going, I'm Stickman, I'm Stickman, and then he gets back to his family and all he says is, I'm Stickman.
Yeah, that is...
I'm Stickman, and you're like, wait, what are you doing?
The sort of literary references that you laid into your piece I really appreciated.
Okay.
So, like, the fact that he is essentially Odysseus trying to get back to Penelope, i.e. stick lady wife. And also she is essentially Mariana of Tennyson's poem, Mariana in the Moated Grange, sort of waiting. But also... because Martin Freeman voices Stickman, he's also Bilbo.
Oh yeah, of course. Of course. He's so many things. I mean, I guess it's just a narrative that's old as time.
Yeah.
It's like man goes on crazy adventure while wife waits at home. And it's like, oh, I hate that.
Well, so I guess with The Hobbit, he doesn't have a wife waiting at home.
True.
But the bit that more that triggered for me was because Bilbo is not, at least to begin with, a particularly enthusiastic part of the party, is he? And also Stickman didn't really want to go on this adventure. It did all sort of just happen to him.
But I stand by the fact that it's his own fault for going on an early morning jog.
Yeah.
Like a complete and utter psychopath. Who does that,
especially straight after Christmas?
Although
maybe it was him turning over a new leaf after like at the beginning of January.
I think the little leaf does sort of like start growing on his head at that point. So,
that's a good point, yeah. So Stickman, if you hadn't opened my eyes to the problems with it, for which I thank you, I probably could, in a kind of cheese haze, have watched it quite enjoyably.
I did quite enjoy it. I mean, it's quite nice to see like a little Stickman bobbing up and down a rushing
river. The music's nice as well.
Yeah, and shout out to all the voice cast.
Yeah, so, they are excellent.
Russell Tovey is a dog.
Rob Brydon's a snail and a frog, I think.
Rob Brydon loves the voiceover work, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He just loves it. Can't get enough. Overall, I give it high marks.
Hugh Bonneville is Santa.
Oh, yeah. So if you weren't watching the Downton Abbey Christmas special this year, no
why
worries.
Why would you not be?
You're still going to get your Hugh Bonneville fix. So.
Of the kind of trio of new things we picked out, we've definitely saved the best till last.
Yes.
It is.
Oh, my God, I almost forgot. I was
how
like, wait, what else we do?
Never fear, listeners. Detectorists is here.
But yeah, they did a Christmas special on day before Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve Eve.
Christmas Eve Eve. The anti-penultimate day before Christmas.
Yes, very good, Caroline.
I'm very proud.
Very smart.
I'm very proud of knowing that word. Yeah, so Detectorists have done a Christmas special, and I didn't know this was happening. I was already, you know, happy sad about the end of the second series. And then didn't we see Johnny Flynn tweeted that he just finished the music for the Detectorists Christmas special?
Yeah, I also feel like I should say, when we last talked about Detectorists, I hadn't finished the second series, which I now obviously have. Mm. And oh my God, it's so good, guys. Like, please go out and buy like a DVD, like an old person, if you haven't seen it, because you just have to. It's so good.
It's so beautiful. And so then the Christmas special kind of picks up a few months after that, where he's going to visit his find in the British Museum. And Andy's like come back briefly to visit from, so things are going really well for him and his wife and his son in Botswana, where he's come back, and so he goes out detecting for old time's sake with his mate. But the episode is very focused on Lance.
Definitely, and I think Andy's plotline was more wrapped up. He got a neater end in the series than Lance did, and I think that's perhaps why it was important to come back and focus on Lance a bit, because although Lance did have perhaps what I think is like one of the greatest emotional moments of TV ever in the final of the second series, he didn't have as consistent a plot line throughout the series.
Yeah.
He sort of had one thing going on, which was his finding his daughter. Whereas obviously Andy went off to Botswana at the end of season two. It's a lot more about sort of Lance's life after his find, and also after Andy's gone away, and sort of what he's up to.
Are you all right, Lance? I've noticed you've not had anything on the finds table for months.
I haven't found anything since that Aston.
Yeah, but mate, that jewel is a once in a lifetime. Nothing's ever going to compare to that. The usual buttons and...
No, you don't understand. I have found nothing since then. Not a buckle, not a ring pull, not even scrap. I get phantom signals, really good, strong signals. They just disappear as soon as I start to dig.
It's the curse of the gold.
Shut up. No such thing.
Don't be so sure.
Remember what happened to Lenny Drinkwater when he found that Viking bracelet?
He didn't fill in his hole.
Beryl Cambridge steps in the hole, breaks an ankle.
Brett goes gangrene.
Leg comes off below the knee. Curse of the goal.
You get the feeling that he, you know, since Andy's been gone, he's been spending quite a lot more time on his own.
Yeah.
And he's got really preoccupied by the idea that he's been cursed by finding the gold, and that wasps keep stinging him, and like things keep falling on him, and he hasn't found a single other thing since finding this amazing artifact.
Yeah, when before he was finding at least like 10 1986 lilt ring pulls a day. So yeah, it's very odd. In the kind of the tradition of like Christmas ghost stories, there's a slight supernatural element coming in.
I got quite freaked out, actually.
Yeah, you were scared, weren't you? But in quite a nice way, in the best way, which is always the explainable and could just be characters being suspicious, but could have an actual supernatural edge to it, which I really like. Because I heard Mackenzie Crook talking about the special on the radio before I watched it, and he said, you know, yeah, it's got this kind of ghost story feel. Mm. And I was a bit like, ooh, that sounds like not that in keeping with the tone of Detectorists, but he makes it work, as of course
he does. Didn't he also say in that same interview that he still hasn't decided whether he wants to do any more?
Yeah So you were saying that the special, not we won't spoil it if you haven't seen it yet, but it's left fairly open-ended.
Yeah, there's no kind of, and I'm very pleased that it is the case that it's like this, that it's there's no like grand wrapping up of everything or anything like that. It just there are some stories that are kind of finished, but the characters don't feel, you don't feel like your relationship with them is over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually going to make reference to something that I'm sure I'll talk about later in this podcast, but one of my favourite pieces of British TV, also starring Mackenzie Crook ever, is The Office UK. Yeah. And when The Office UK ended, he says, Martin Freeman's character, Tim, says, turning the camera off is not really an ending, is it? And that's what how I feel about The Detectorists.
I just
feel
felt
like
a tiny bit weepy when you said that.
It's such a good line. But I feel like that with Detectorists, that if it ends, they've just turned the cameras off.
Yeah.
And that's always like an amazing piece of TV when the characters are actually just like still pottering about somewhere in your mind.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done.
Yeah, that's the mark of the best writing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we loved it. Please watch it, and please watch everything else they've done. And Mackenzie Crook, if you're listening, please write more. Yeah. Oh my god!
Seriously, listeners, if you do watch Detectorists, please write in and talk to us, because we don't have anyone else to talk to about this apart from each other.
We'll start a Detectorists fan club, and we'll have badges and jackets like their Detectorists club.
Oh, we could have a weekend before we go. So please let us know. Please watch it, and then you know, get on Twitter and tell us how much you like it.
Will you search through the lonely earth for me? Climb through the briar and bramble. I'll be your treasure.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So we also want to talk about our Christmassy traditions and our kind of old classics to get out of Christmas. One thing that we both immediately said when we were thinking about this segment was Gavin and Stacey's Christmas special, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just feel like the more I've thought about this, the more I've realised that Gavin and Stacey is like soaked into all of my ideas about Christmas television.
Yeah.
That lots of things that I think are in other programmes, Christmas specials, are actually in
Gavin and
Stacey.
Stacey one. Yeah. Gavin and Stacey's so funny with language as well, that like it's all the little quirks of language that really stick in your head.
Mm.
Like it's not necessarily like, oh, remember this plot, or like, oh, remember that scene. But like you'll just say things and you'll be like, wait, where was that from? And then it'll be Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like the really totemic Gavin and Stacey Christmas bit is when Smithy and Gavin are singing Do They Know It's Christmas?
But say a prayer. Pray for the other one. At Christmas time, it's hard. But when you're having fun, Gavin and Stacey, it's a world outside your window. But sing it.
And it's a world of dread and fear.
Doom.
Well, tonight,
instead of you. Oh my
is a great song.
A modern Christmas classic.
Geldof at his best.
And mature. Don't forget mature always gets overlooked.
Do you mean mid-year?
Yeah, that's what I said, mature.
It's not one word, it's two. Mid-year.
Is it? I thought it was mature, like mature cheddar.
Yeah, it's
to
so
each
good.
Other over
it's
the so phone.
Yeah, I love that because he calls, doesn't he? And Smithy's already like mid song. Yeah, so he just answers it and he's like, there's a world outside your window.
And Gavin's just like, Gavin's just walking down the road on the phone. He's like, sing it. So he just sings in the middle of the street.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
they're really
brilliant.
Going for it. It's one of the best things about Gavin and Stacey is when Smithy and Gavin have like a shared joy.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. It's
and
really
I feel
good.
Like that's so, I don't know, that really encapsulates all of my lovely feelings about Gavin and Stacey. Which, incidentally, if you haven't watched, is a British sitcom from the mid-noughties about a guy from Essex and a girl from Wales who get together and
embark on a long-distance relationship and yeah. have to keep meeting each other's friends and family, and therein lies the comedy of the tension between the two
yeah.
groups.
And travelling back and forward across yeah. the country. And yeah, that's all it is, really. But it's fantastic. And speaking of phrases, I realised one of the things that always makes me laugh is, so you know the bit when, so Smithy is James Corden's character, who's Gavin's best mate. He turns up for Christmas at Gavin's house and he's brought all his presents for everyone and he like tips them out of a bag onto the floor. And Gavin's mum's like, Smithy, why have you wrapped everything in tinfoil? And he goes, it's a dream. You just scrunch. And then he does like a kind of scrunching gesture with his hands, which is a lot like a kind of Katy Perry raw gesture. But with tinfoil, it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, it's so good. That always sticks in my mind, the idea that you could just wrap your presents in tinfoil. Like, yeah. You could.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah, so there are so many things about it that just really say Christmas to me. Especially because when it was still on and being broadcast on like BBC One by the end, it was like the most popular comedy
yeah,
on the BBC.
Yeah, it was really at its peak when that special came out.
So they used bits of it as like all of the Christmas stings on television.
Yeah.
So you'd like for weeks beforehand, once they, because they do this thing on BBC television where about a month before Christmas, all of the like interstitials between programmes telling you what channel you're on suddenly just have like snow in them.
And they do big super cuts of all their Christmas programming.
Yeah. But I had a look and I found them all on YouTube from like 7 years ago. All of the like continuity 45 second clips of Gavin and Stacey are all on there. Because yeah, that's how big a deal it was. Like the BBC put it at the heart of Christmas.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder we feel like we do about it, really.
Yeah. But there's so many things that like it just does so well. I think Gavin and Stacey has always handled music really, really
yeah.
well. And obviously James Corden's like sort of very boyish love of music comes through in it. There's the bit in the coach where Dave Coaches drives Nessa and Gwen and Bryn
yeah.
down and they
driving
do,
home for Christmas.
They do driving home for Christmas. And also Mick gets the piano out and they do
yeah.
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. There's loads. They really get that sort of groaning familiarity when a Christmas song or any
yeah.
really popular song comes on and you're with a group of people and everyone's like, oh, but they're at the same time they're like, no, I love this one. And they get that tone so well. And just little things like you were saying, you really remember the line when Smithy walks into Pam's house for Christmas.
Obviously. Oh yeah. So he goes, Merry Christmas to you and also your king. Which is obviously a corruption of the actual phrase. But it's yeah.
I also love when he's like, Mick, where's that turkey? I'm famished. Like
oh, and
doesn't,
at
like
some
that.
Point he goes and Mick's doing some Nigella shit with that turkey that I cannot wait to get inside me.
Yeah, there's so many like just great little bits like that. I could just watch it endlessly. It's also like surprisingly an emotional one, the Christmas episode, because one of my favourite lines in it. So there's a big confrontation between the two sides of the family when they realise that Gavin is moving to Cardiff. Pam just like yells, "I know about you, the bitches of Eastwick." She makes me laugh so much.
Yeah, so Gavin and Stacey, obviously. Other staples of Christmas television in the UK are Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, didn't our colleague John, who is a massive Doctor Who fan, told me a good fact just before we came down, which is Doctor Who now holds the record for the most consecutive Christmas specials. I do always watch the Doctor Who Christmas special with my dad, who only watches Doctor Who Christmas specials. He's never seen any of the rest of it. And for some reason,
that's a very confusing way to watch Doctor Who.
I know, but for some reason
he must be like, there's a lot of Santa in Doctor Who.
For some reason we've developed this thing where, because I know marginally more about it than he does, he asks me questions every 30 seconds, like, who's that guy? Why is he there? I thought this was a time thing. What's that? Who are they? Why Christmas?
Oh, bless.
Why is Kylie Minogue in it? That kind of thing.
Literally nobody knows.
So we don't really watch it so much as have a kind of ongoing argument.
That is the best way to watch all Christmas
whilst
TV.
It's in the background.
Yeah.
So that's, I look forward to that. Downton Abbey's been a
stage that must be big for you, Caroline.
I don't trust Uncle Julian. I think he might kill everybody.
Yeah, they're always so miserable, aren't they?
All of the like broadsheet columnists who like to pretend that Downton Abbey is actually like a fancy period adaptation, every Christmas have to confront the fact that it is just a soap in old-fashioned costumes.
Yeah.
Because they always do something like murder somebody really horribly, or like something catches fire, or someone goes to prison for no reason, which is
get out of my house instead of the like get out of my pub.
Yeah. But it matches up very well to an EastEnders Christmas special. This year is the last one, so there will be lots. And I think, just from the kind of various spoilers and stuff I've seen, he has exactly fallen into the trap that he is determined to wrap up everything. You know how the last Lord of the Rings film is just nothing but endings, one after another? I'm pretty sure that's what the Downton Abbey Christmas special is going to be.
Oh God, isn't that like pairing everyone off?
Pairing everyone off, giving closure to every single storyline, even though, like you were saying, totally not necessary. Good TV doesn't do that. But anyway, so that's going to be... our colleague Barbara was saying when we were chatting about this that that's the thing she hates most about Christmas Day television. It's like ITV's most lucrative thing.
Yeah, so it gets the best slot.
Gets the like 9 p.m. slot on Christmas Day when everyone's too drunk and tired to move from in front of the television. So you've got a captive audience. So all of the highest value ads are in it. So there are so many ad breaks that doing what's essentially like a 1 hour 20 special takes like 2 hours. It's awful.
God, no.
And I say that as someone who's, you know, a fan. Yeah. Anyway, so that's something to not really look forward to endure.
One of my very idiosyncratic Christmas watches is this Beatrix Potter, like, cartoon adaptation. So they did, like, a series of Beatrix Potters, you know, like Peter Rabbit and Jemima Puddle Duck and stuff, as, like, cartoons. And they're all bookended by, like, real life. Obviously not real life, it's not the real Beatrix Potter, but, like, live action footage of an actress being Beatrix Potter, like, write the thing.
Oh, I've seen those, yeah. Yeah,
they're quite weird. I like them all, they're all great. But we had a particularly fond VHS copy of The Tailor of Gloucester. Where I'm from is very near Gloucester, and there's lots of sort of cartoon shots of Gloucester Cathedral and stuff, and it's set at Christmas time, and it's about the tailor trying to make a posh wedding coat for the mayor who's getting married on Christmas Day. So it's all about the build-up to Christmas Day and him trying to make the coat, but he's poor and his cat has to go out and buy him more like stuff, and the cat doesn't do it because he buys milk or something instead. The cat's evil and there's mice. It doesn't make any sense. You know Sussex Carol?
Yeah.
Is like really in it the whole way through. So it's like there's carolers that come and knock on Beatrix Potter's door and sing Sussex Carol at the beginning, but it's also sort of a motif throughout the thing. It's just very, very festive, and there's original songs, you know, with little drunk rats and things singing them, and it's great.
Really nice.
Yeah, it's really good.
A slightly, well, completely the opposite of that in terms of how nice, and the thing my family always like to do is watch something really grisly and grim.
Mm.
So the last few years, we've saved up one of the Scandi Noir things for Christmas. So we've watched
that's really bleak
all
as
of the series of The Killing, The Bridge, all that kind of stuff. So this year we haven't watched any of the third series of The Bridge. We're all on a kind of on our honour not to watch it. My mum's been recording it, and we're going to watch it all together over Christmas.
That'll be quite fun. I watched The Bridge season one and found it so utterly traumatising that I have not revisited.
So so there've been two that I've seen. The third one, obviously, I haven't seen. The first one is the best one in the sense that it's the most coherent. The second one got really, really stupid. I'm pretty sure the third one will too.
Okay, cool.
But it's all... The sillier it gets, the more, like, gory and weird. So, yeah. The second series involved some, like, vegetarian anarchists wearing pig heads, murdering people. It was awful. Yeah, so that was a fun Christmas.
That doesn't sound like my vegetarianism at all.
Another thing that my sister and I like to do is stay up late after my parents have gone to bed and watch a Harry Potter film.
That's a classic. You have to do that. Me and my sister watch quite a lot of Harry Potter over Christmas. It's really fun. My absolute favourite one of all time has to be The Office UK, which I haven't actually watched for a few years, but it's just like so in my mind. It's like the greatest
Christmas special ever.
Yeah, I really think so, because it's like we were talking about this with Barbara and she was like, yeah, I forgot how bleak it is. Like, they devote like over an hour to just like making you feel depressed, and then the payoff is so big that you're just like, oh my god, it gives me so many warm and fuzzy feelings just think about it. Yeah, and it's just so like low key. And again, they use music really well.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Kind of bad disco. They have a Yazoo cover of Only You. But it's like it's like the most emotional thing ever. I don't really know how they do it. It's amazing to me. But again, it's just one of those ones where the characters are so real for you that you're so invested that any little bit of hope that you get, you're like, oh my God, this is so emotional.
And they're so often like vile to each other as well that the kind of seeing them imbued with Christmas spirit moves you far more than if you just saw a nice person.
The only thing is there's not enough Gareth. There's not enough Mackenzie Crook. I love one of the best bits, just stays with me so much, is they do Christmas, what's called Secret Santa.
Yeah.
And he gets, presumably from Tim, a TA Ken doll, because you know they tease him all the time about being in the Territorial Army, because they're like, it's not the real army. So he gets like a Ken doll in like military gear, and he opens it and he goes, well, I specifically asked for vouchers, so annoying. And it's just so well delivered. And so whenever anyone gives me a present, I really want to go, well, I specifically asked for vouchers, so annoying.
Looking from a window above, it's like a story of love. Can you hear me? Came back only yesterday. I'm moving farther away. Won't you near me? All I needed was the love you gave. All I needed for another day. And all I
So now it's time for us to chat about some of the many, many recommendations you sent in. We couldn't watch most of them because obviously you just sent us so many, but we'll share them in the interest of, you know, Christmas being all about giving and sharing. Did you buy that?
Yeah, I do. And so it's been really interesting actually to see where the overlap has been. There are some things that appear on almost almost everybody's emails. And obviously, and then some kind of more idiosyncratic things from, you know, what part of the world you're from or just your particular preferences.
So here's an email from Leslie who said that a couple of her Christmas favourites include Christmas movies that are also in the rom-com variety, which is a popular one, I think.
That's a good space of the Venn diagram.
Yeah, exactly. So she's mentioned The Holiday and Love Actually. Hopefully you enjoyed last week's Love Actually special.
Don't tell us if you didn't.
Yeah. But she says, I would also highly recommend Sandra Bullock's While You Were Sleeping. Her awesome 90s outfits are almost reason enough, which is like definitely reason for me to watch something.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. She also recommends Justin Bieber's Christmas album, which is just like, yeah, definitely, definitely up for that.
So Ed got in touch to tell us that one thing he was obsessed with as a kid was Bernard and the Genie, which is not something I'd heard of before. Mm. Apparently it starred Lenny Henry as a man cursed into a lamp as a genie for 2,000 years and Alan Cumming as a downbeat finder of this lamp in the modern day, i.e. the 90s. It was set in London at Christmas and it was written by Richard Curtis, so of course it also has Rowan Atkinson, who has questionable facial hair and speaks in an odd way.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, so that sounds really good.
That sounds like a real guilty pleasure, not that I believe in guilty pleasures.
But I also really love the fact that as soon as you say it was written by Richard Curtis,
it makes sense.
It makes total yeah, sense.
Like, wait, Lenny Henry's a genie and someone finds him in the 90s. Then you're like, oh, but it was Richard Curtis. Yeah, sure.
So yeah, thanks very much. I'm definitely going to seek that out. It sounds brilliant.
It sounds weird, which is good. Then we've got Anne, who said she's super excited for the release of Sofia Coppola and Bill Murray's Netflix, A Very Murray Christmas. Which I've seen on the thing, but I don't really understand what it is.
Netflix has been recommending me that solidly for weeks now. So, and also, do you ever have that where Netflix is convinced that you're going to like something?
Yeah.
And you resist. I tend to resist because I don't like being told what to do. And then I finally give in and watch it. I was like, you were right, Netflix.
Damn it. Algorithms are taking over the world.
You were so right, Netflix. I'm sorry I ever doubted you. So I will watch that because clearly I'm going to love it.
Anne's another person who's recommended Love Actually again. Check out the special. Plug, plug, plug. Though if you're listening to this, we don't really need to plug you anything.
So Roz emailed to ask whether we would be doing some kind of Seriously Christmas special. Spoiler, we just have. and they say, I realise there was a great deal of source material for this, but personally, if you covered the Home Alone series, my personal favourite is Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, and perhaps the Muppet Christmas Carol
Carol, or the modern classic Elf, it would be a festive treat. Well, we hope it has been a festive treat. And also, I absolutely concur on Home Alone 2 and Muppet Christmas Carol.
So do I. Oh my God, yeah. A fellow believer in Home Alone 2.
I don't like Home Alone. Well, I don't not like Home Alone 1.
No, I love Home Alone 1.
But Home Alone 2 is better because it's weirder.
Yeah, but Home Alone 2 just has an edge for me.
Yeah.
I'm such a Home Alone 2 truther. Like, I'm always like to my friends, like, yeah, but have you seen Home Alone 2? And then I literally got a load of WhatsApps from a friend the other day being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I was like, oh my God, what's happened? Is she dying? Like, and then I replied and she was like, I'm watching Home Alone 2 by myself and like laughing out loud. It's so, so good. It's just great. So it's for anyone who's uninitiated, it is the exact same plot as Home Alone 1, but instead of getting left behind, Macaulay Culkin, Kevin McAllister, accidentally flies to New York with his dad's credit card. I mean, imagine the stuff that can ensue from that, and it all does happen. He's like, well, it's not Harrods, is it? But it's like an enormous toy store.
Bloomingdale's or something.
It's called like Duncan's toy store or something.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember.
But I don't think it's real, but anyway, so he's like raiding like the toy store, just having a great time there. He's books a really, really expensive hotel room at the Savoy and is just like living his best life. He like finds an abandoned house of his uncle's to like set booby traps for the very same burglars, so he's that bit covered too. It's amazing, and it's also like really, really touching. And there's an amazing scene with an old homeless woman who he's scared of and then realizes that it's just another human being, and they like talk about they talk about like being vulnerable, and like Kevin McAllister does a metaphor where he's like, but I got a brand new pair of roller skates for Christmas and I liked them so much that I never ever went on them, and then you know what happened? I grew out of them, and you don't want to grow out of your heart. And you're like, oh my God, this is so cheesy, but I'm so here for it. So yes, please everyone watch Home Alone 2. Roz, I completely agree with you. And we had an email from Dana, who's originally from Germany, and has been living in the UK for over 5 years, so she's given us like a quite good smorgasbord of like German British stuff. And she says that in Germany, The Last Unicorn will be on TV every year around Christmas, an animated film from the 80s made by the guys that later went on to form Studio Ghibli, and really has nothing to do with Christmas at all, like anything. There is snow for 3 seconds and that's it. So, weird. But it's beautiful and a film that has been with me literally all of my life. Christmas without it is not an option for me, and it always baffles me that people here don't seem to even know it exists. And then she says, on the 25th, it's either Die Hard or National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which are pretty big staples. But that's funny to hear about The Last Unicorn. I definitely want to check that out, because I feel like if it's become a Christmas staple like that, it must just be like a magic quality to it that people have connected with. And that's why it's on at Christmas time, because it's just a magical time. Dana also recommends Drei Haselnüsse für Aschenbrödel. That was my best German accent.
Great German, by the way.
Three Nuts for Cinderella. And it sounds very beautiful. It's based on Cinderella, but with a twist. So yeah, Drei Haselnüsse für Aschenbrödel.
You're just showing off now.
I definitely don't think that was right. So thanks so much, everyone, for all your nice Christmas recommendations. That was a selection of them.
And we hope that you've had a good Christmas, because we're speaking to you in the future.
I hope I have had a good Christmas.
I hope future me is having a good time. We're bad at this. We hope you've had a good Christmas and that you'll find something in what we've talked about to catch up on before you have to go back to work in January.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoy what we do, you might want to consider following us on Twitter at @srslypod. We post links to things we've mentioned in the show, gifts we like, and all manner of other things you'll probably enjoy.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.